This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Dr. Lynn Rainville joins me. She's an assistant professor of anthropology and archaeology at Sweetbriar College, which, remind everybody where that is, down 29, right?
Yes, Sweetbriar College is 55 miles south, just north of Lynchburg.
And you know that commute very well, I would assume.
Yes, I do.
Because you're a member of the community, but you also work down at Sweetbriar. Now, you're an archaeologist and you work on a whole lot of different things. Before we talk about the work that you do here in Central Virginia, let's talk about the work you do in Turkey. And before we do that, I'm curious, because I married an archaeologist, when did you know, boy, this is something I'm going to do with my life. I really want to be an archaeologist.
Well, I had always been interested in the past and had started as a historian and realized that I wanted to be outside of archives and able to travel, but didn't actually have the money to travel. And then I realized that if you study the dead, they can't talk back. So I combined those two interests along with an interest in artifacts and material culture. And after I graduated from college, I pursued a PhD in Near Eastern archaeology, and that's the work that I do abroad in Turkey, where I'm the assistant director at an ancient Assyrian city that was in the northern borders of ancient Mesopotamia.
Some of the very earliest congregated dwellings of humankind, actually, in that part of the world, right?
Yes, Mesopotamia is often called the cradle of civilization. I work on a slightly later period in the first millennia BCE, and that's in southeastern modern-day Turkey, but in ancient times, that would have been at the far reaches of northern Mesopotamia. So it was actually a fortified settlement where the Assyrians were trying to hold down the fort at the northern part of their empire.
Wow. Now, tell me, so in the summers, then, occasionally you grab your trowel and fly to Turkey, of all places?
Yes. In fact, every summer for the last 11 years.
Oh, my goodness. So what's Turkey like?
Very hot.
I was going to say hot and dusty.
It's an absolutely lovely country, and I've been fortunate to be able to pick up Turkish along the way, at least a functional level. So I work in an area that's actually Kurdish down in the southeast, and our workers are Kurdish. It's a small Kurdish village, and then we excavate on a mound or a huyuk or a tell. All these things are the debris of ancient civilizations, one layer after another in collapsed mud brick. So it's many dozens of meters high, and you start at the top and you go to the bottom.
Wow. So now the situation in Iraq, how is that affecting your field work? Because this is becoming steadily a more and more dangerous part of the world.
We are several hundred miles north of the Iraqi border, and we're in the Kurdish area, which is, relatively speaking, stable, both in, has been at least up until recently, in northern Iraq and then in southern Turkey. So really the biggest concern is nothing to do with Iraq. It has to do with the ongoing issues between the Turks and the Kurds.
Because the Turks don't like the Kurds very much, do they?
Well, there is a disagreement over whether or not the Kurds should have an independent state in that part of Turkey. But the good news is, from an American perspective, for once, America is not immediately the bad guy. So this means that although there are tensions between Turks and Kurds, it very rarely spills over into tourists or people working in that area.
Right, right. Now, in Iraq, it has spilled over to the journalist. I mean, once upon a time, Kimberly Dozier of CBS was telling us recently at an event at Monticello, you know, once upon a time, she used to be able to just walk around and nobody would bother the journalists. And now they're picking them off and trying going out of their way to try to kill journalists because it brings them more press. But you're, if I understand you right, at least the scholars where you go are still safe.
Yes. And also, this is Turkey. Turkey's a member of NATO. They're applying to be part of the EU. They are an ally of the American government. So it's a very different situation. And really, the biggest tensions we've had have been between the ongoing dispute between the Turks and the Kurds, not much spillover from Iraq.
So what's the one big thing that you think about from your research in Turkey and these early civilizations that you think you know because you're there all the time, but that most Americans probably don't know or don't understand?
Well, about the research, one of the things that we find in this part of Turkey are cuneiform tablets. This is one of the earliest writing systems in the world. It's written on baked clay using a reed stylus, and it looks like little wedges. Literally, the word cuneiform means a wedge-shaped writing. But this tells us a lot of information about everyday life in this city, including my favorite, which is a letter from about 612 BCE. This is when the heartland of Assyria has already collapsed, but unbeknownst to the people living in this fort. And they send a letter to the heartland desperately seeking assistance. And the practice was to always have the equivalent of a carbon copy. They left one copy in their settlement, one they sent for help. And at that point, the heartland has already collapsed, we know historically, so help was never to be sent. And that was the end of the Assyrian settlement soon thereafter.
Let's rejoin our conversation with Dr. Lynn Rainville, an assistant professor of anthropology and archaeology at Sweetbriar. Now, Lynn, you've done a lot of work, not just in Turkey, of course, but here in Central Virginia as well. Tell us about that.
Well, I moved here in 2001 from New Hampshire, and I had done about 10 years of work on historic New England graveyards. And when I arrived here, I was curious what the enslaved communities would have done during the antebellum period. It started off as a trivia question. I figured I could read a book on the subject and move on to some of my other research. And as I started looking into it, that turned out to be a very difficult question to answer. These cemeteries that of enslaved communities are located on former plantations. They've very often been lost to the historic record. They were never put on maps in the first place. And then today, with a lot of development and building and just the changing of land patterns, it's very hard to remember where these things were located. So that began a project. I began with a cemetery out in Browns Cove as part of a large enslaved community. And now I'm on cemetery number 70.
Now, remind us, when you refer to the antebellum period, there's the non-scholars out there who are scratching their heads. Exactly is that antebellum?
Yes, prior to the Civil War and during the period of slavery here in the United States. And that's how it began, as a study of slave cemeteries. After working on only slave cemeteries for a couple of years, I realized that it was just as important to gather the historic information from the period after the war and into the historic present, about the mid-20th century, and collect inscriptions off of gravestones, because they end up telling the story, both genealogical, family history, religious history, social history. It turns out to be a really interesting window into the history of these African-American communities.
And is it safe to assume, or ignorant to assume, that a lot of that history is often either lost, or it's in oral history, or it's written on a tombstone and nowhere else?
I would say it's safe to say that it's in the family Bible, perhaps preserved in family traditions, but that individuals very often have moved outside of the county, so they may have a very rich family tradition, but to be able to read about it in a book and learn about the 50% of Albemarle County's population in 1860 that was black, not white, this is a very good place to go.
How did burials work on a slave plantation here in Central Virginia? How did the enslaved peoples... tell us about how it worked. I assume that the cemeteries were separate and distinct.
It varied with the plantation. It had partly to do with how large the enslaved community was, the relationships among and between the white owners and the black community, and then how long that community had been present on that plantation. So there are certainly some large plantations here, including Thomas Jefferson's Monticello, where slave cemeteries that have been found so far are located separately from the white cemetery. In other cemeteries, the African Americans were buried in unmarked graves within a white cemetery or just outside of the walls of a white cemetery. And sometimes they're all in together, but then segregated, for example, in Oakwood. Oakwood, up until the 1960s, just as in life, was a segregated cemetery.
And Oakwood is where?
Oakwood is in downtown Charlottesville off of Cherry and Ridge.
Okay. And so where is the enslaved burials, the enslaved people, where was that cemetery at Monticello? Because everybody knows where Thomas Jefferson, where the white cemetery is. It's on your drive down from the mountain there. Can't miss it.
The one they've located so far is unfortunately in the parking lot.
You're kidding.
No.
Literally under the asphalt.
Well, it's the asphalt is around the cemetery. So this is one of the reasons why to work on the project that I've been working on for 7 years, which is to locate these cemeteries in advance of construction so that they get on modern day maps. And there certainly were more slave cemeteries at Monticello and in all of his outlying, Thomas Jefferson's outlying farms. But this is the one that's been located so far.
My guest is Dr. Lynn Rainville, an archaeologist and anthropologist at Sweetbriar. How does the law work if you can identify and tell the state, look, this is a historic black cemetery? How does it work then if some developer wants to come in and say, yeah, but I want to put a neighborhood there?
Well, in Virginia, private property laws are pretty strong, and there are several complications. If you want to move that cemetery, you do have to apply, but it is possible to apply to move old cemeteries, especially if you can prove or feel that you can prove that it's been abandoned. So if it's an active in use cemetery, it's very difficult. If you prove it's abandoned by posting bans in the newspapers and on the courthouse to try to locate living descendants. Then sometimes you can get permission with archaeological assistance and the assistance of a funeral home to rebury those individuals elsewhere. But my project is very much about trying to locate these cemeteries in advance to avoid the removal of individuals.
Tell us the story, perhaps, of one or two of these cemeteries that you have stumbled upon, I would imagine, in some cases, and found that perhaps no one knew was there.
I would say at least 75% of the cemeteries that I've mapped and researched, very few people knew were there, if anyone. There was an article in February's Daily Progress on my work, and that produced about 50 calls. One of those calls was simply a business owner who said that he was pretty certain there was a cemetery out behind where he worked, behind the dumpsters is how he described it. And sure enough, if you went back there, and this was unfortunately in the late spring when it was already completely overgrown with trees falling everywhere, that was an African-American family cemetery, which with obviously a house that predated that business. So that was fascinating to see. People have called me about cemeteries right in downtown Charlottesville in the back of yards that have been there for more than 100 years based on the date of the headstones. And then sometimes I'm called out onto plantations and with a topographic map and looking for certain features like hilltop locations, the symbolic association of locating cemeteries near water or rivers, trying to find cemeteries that are on those plantations, usually on a next nearest hilltop to wherever the white cemetery is located.
Now, is there a website where people can go to and learn about this project?
Yes, it's a website through UVA's Carter Woodson Institute, but really the easiest way, the URL is a little long, but if you put in African American cemeteries and Albemarle County in any search engine, you'll pull up the site, which has the acronym AACAAC for African American cemeteries in Albemarle and Amherst County, the county where I work.
Right, right. So now what can we learn when we go to the site?
Well, on the site, I have several pages that talk about the significance of African American cemeteries, how they differ from their white contemporaneous cemeteries, folk traditions, the history of families, and then people who have family descendants here in this county can go and enter in names into a search engine and pull up the photograph of descendants, the photograph of the gravestone, inscriptions, epitaphs, year of birth, year of death, very useful for genealogical research or just learning a little bit more about your family. So it's made for the public who would have no direct connection and for individuals whose relatives are buried in these cemeteries.
What a fantastic resource. And how many years have you been working on this?
About seven.
Wow. It just sounds amazing. Now, speaking of the internet, you were also the creator of a local history blog. Is that right?
Yes, which, for better or for worse, I decided to call Loco History, but the Loco doesn't stand for crazy in this case. It's an acronym for Local County History, and I just wanted to, by creating this, encourage people to get out and explore the history of Albemarle County, which is very rich and includes so many different facets, both within the African-American community, Native American, European-American, immigrants, you name it, all different socioeconomic classes. And the memorials of these individuals are pretty much surrounding us everywhere you look, from a house to a statue to artifacts left behind. And the website is at www.locohistory.org.
L-O-C-O history.
L-O-C-O history.org.
And you also serve on the board of the Albemarle-Charlottesville Historical Society, is that right?
Yes, I've been very happy since 2005 to serve on the board, and that allows me to keep my finger on the pulse of local history at a slightly different level.
And they have the Spirit Walk tours coming up next
They do,
month, right?
And in fact,
that's a big deal here.
If you are a member of the Historical Society, you get to buy your tickets in advance over the next week. If you are not a member, you have to wait until a week or so later, at which point they might be sold out. And we have a new director this year, a 75-minute tour, which promises to be fantastic. And those are in the last week of October.
And actually, next week, Thursday, October 4th, Gene Cooper and Doug Day from the Historical Society will be in to fill us in on all the details of her new book and of the Spirit Walk. We'll be talking about that and give you all the details. Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dr. Lynn Brainville is an assistant professor of anthropology and archaeology at Sweetbriar College, does research in Turkey, and here in Central Virginia on historically black cemeteries. I really appreciate your time.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.